You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Dear Colgate, I love that you love that I love being at home. You even let me whiten my teeth from home.
Because you know how I feel about getting up from my cloud couch.
The Colgate Optic White LED Kit gives professional level results in just 10 minutes a day for 10 days when used as directed.
And that's why, Colgate, I want you to meet my parents.
Because ever since meeting you, I've been living life to the brightest.
Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Welcome to the Diablo's Den, episode number 10, Corona Chronicles. I'm your co-host, Jay Reason, and I am here with the one and the only, Danny Diablo, a.k.a. Lord Ezek.
Jay Reason, Diablo's Den.
Yo, E, what's going on, man? Been a couple weeks, right? We had a couple weird weeks. We had this crazy storm.
Great, I got a crazy storm right here.
You have a crazy storm.
Crazy storm. Thank you, crazy storm.
Yeah, I mean, dude, the East Coast got hit with that crazy, I don't even remember the name of it, that tropical storm. Man, I didn't have power for a couple days. Shit sucked. We're back.
We're back in action.
Episode 10.
Well, I have to say, check this out, Jay. I have to say, Doyle, rest in peace. Doyle,
yeah,
GMS.
Man. Again, starting out the show with a little bit of some sad news. Shout out to Doyle, Bulldog.
I love you, Doyle. I miss you. What a good guy. What a good guy. He loved the culture.
Yeah, he's been a hardcore.
He's been a hardcore scene, Rochester, New York. Just one of the good guys. Like, it sucks. It's like the good die young, and fucking like the dude. Was a good guy. He was a brother of mine, a GMS brother. Yep. And he was there helping the bands out. He loved music. He loved the culture. He loved hip hop. He loved hardcore. And he was just in there. And he would help out no matter what. And I just have to say that I can't say one bad thing bad about him ever.
Yeah, that's sad, man.
It's just sad that during this time, you know, with COVID and all that stuff, they like, he passed away. It was so fast, and no one even knew. I mean, until like the day after. I mean,
wow. So yeah, man, that fucking sucks. And then another sad one. Just want to shout out Jerry X's mother.
Yeah, so she passed away. She
passed away.
So that's the cancer. So, and it happened so quick too. But Jerry X, I love you, brother. It'll rock all day.
Shout out, man. But on a Let's bring this show up a little bit. We got some cool. This is a kind of cool. I don't know, what do you want to call it in your career? Evolution in your career, but you recently, or should I say I help? How do you?
I would say that Jay Reason. Listen, a lot of people like Jay Reason should be managing me, but you know what? No, he helped me a lot. Shout out to my manager, the GRP.
Yeah,
Jay Reason.
I like to help out where I can, and we just this one was really exciting to. To bring together, and I want to shout out our guy Brandon over at Cameo, where you
shout
can
out
now,
to Brandon, yeah,
where you can now get a greeting from the one and only international hardcore superstar Lord Ezek, aka Danny Diablo.
That's me,
dude. You've been killing it. We're recording this about what, 3 days after you launched, or 2 days?
Yeah,
not even
two days, and it's been fucking insane. And people are so nice, and they've been. I'm just happy I'm right next to Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, that's awesome, man. I'm actually going to, we'll overlay that over the screen so you can see that. So everybody, I want to encourage you to go out and get a cameo from Lord Ezek over here.
just go on Cameo. tell them how to do it, how they can get and do it.
But yeah, so you'll go to cameo.com/Danny Diablo, and then you can book Danny for a couple bucks. And he'll, I mean, go ahead, right?
Listen, if you need me to make to threaten someone, or make a joke on someone, or just tell someone like I want to beat the shit out of them, or bar mitzvah, whatever. Actually, everyone's been really cool. I mean, it's usually only been doing it for 2 days, and the people are so nice, and they just people usually when they it's a best friends want me to say something cool, and they're doing something good, and they get to support the house and congratulate them, or it's a wife or such that they know their husband's a big fan of mine. So they're like, hey, what's up, yo?
Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
It's cool. I like doing. Basically, I talk shit all day anyway, so now I'm getting paid for it.
Yeah, might as well just get paid for it. So again,
thank you, Jay. Yeah. Jay, I love you.
Ah, dude, you're welcome.
Cameo.
Yeah, so shout out once again to our boy Brandon from Cameo for helping us get that together, man. So, E, you just came back from recording.
Milwaukee.
You came from Milwaukee, which looked like a fucking crazy trip. I seen you were with DJ Kaz.
Oh my God.
And he was very colorful on this vacation trip.
All I know is this. You can't take, like, wherever I bring him, they just straight up, you know he's from the Bronx. It's like you bring a nigga out of the Bronx, they do not know how to act.
Well, and he, I mean, let's just say he's not getting lost. I'm going to see if I can put some of these pictures, like, I'm going to grab some of them. He had like the yellow man outfit on, and then he was taking some merch from the.
Yeah, you gotta watch DJ Kaz whenever you do anything.
Yeah. So was that trip? That trip was pretty good though. You were just finishing up the Street CD, right? You got a new one coming out.
The new Street CD is called Danny Diablo Street CD. Volume number 3, the Triz.
And this is the first
by DJ Kaz. Yeah, this first.
First one in a long time, right? Either for the second one was like 2004, I think we were saying.
Yeah, yes, it's last time we did 2004. So this, all three was done by DJ Kaz. So.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. So E, what made you decide? It's been like years since you did the last Street CD, right? What made you decide to do one now? Like you just felt you had mad shit to put out, or like because you know what? That's a pretty big project for you because it's been so long. You had mad shit out since then, like. Like, what made you decide to try to, like, tackle that now?
Because right now, nowadays, kids are really, attention spans are fucking gone. You mean mm-hmm. the phone and the, you know, the internet. So I was like, I just dropped Devils and Demons. You mean?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you've been cranking out a ton of releases.
And we're killing it. Devils and Demons. On 4-5 Records, it's me and the kid Mars. It's a... We did an album, and that shit is blowing up in the underground. Talk about underground, like the hardcore kids are loving it, and the fucking all over the world, like people in Chile, Argentina, Colombia, they would never listen to hip hop. That for anyone really. You know what I mean, and now that the young kids are like 20 something years old, or 20 to 25, but they listen to Danny Diablo, you know, and they love it. So I just dropped that record. Like 3 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, that's crazy. So it's like you just felt like, yo, might as well stay hot on that, get all collection out, put all this stuff together.
Yeah, so I got stuff. So this record is mostly hip hop, but it got a lot of hardcore stuff in it. So me and West Nile together, me and me and the D's Nuts do a song together.
That's going to come out on Force 5, right?
Force 5 right, Records.
So shout out to RP.
Shout out to DRP, he's doing really well. So I compelled everything. Yesterday I was in the studio.
I saw that. Shout out Lord Jewish. I saw you.
Shout out to Lord Jewish, our boy, our DJ.
Yeah, I can't wait to listen, man. And shout out, I got a shout out too to the Gotham Podcast guys because I just talked to them and you know listen. We will definitely get back into the old format. I don't think either one of us are itching to get back into like commuting into the city and sharing a microphone with. You know, hundreds of people in the same room, unless it's for a hardcore show. So,
what's going on? That's so crazy, man. You mean like, it's like, just put it this way. I can't wait to go in the studio and like it's normal again.
Yep.
But I guess I'd also say about the Force 5 Records, the Street CD Volume Number 3, Kaz did a great job. I got songs in there with the guy, with Joe Fado, Big Lito. I got awesome. a whole bunch of stuff no one at least 10 new songs no one has even heard.
That's sick.
So that's album already.
When do you think that'll be out? Like next month, maybe?
Probably 2 months. Probably
October.
2 months.
Okay. Cool.
But Force 5 Records just signed Scarhead.
Oh no shit! Awesome, man. That's a good move. Great.
We're doing an EP. The EP's name is going to be called Generators of Violence.
I'm going to have to get in with DRP on that to make sure on the marketing end some things are done right. But
we're going to be talking to Cortex in Europe to distribute it the right way. You know what I mean? So that's what you talk to them. Yeah, Jay Reason, you help my brother out.
We'll do it. Yeah, no, I've been talking to DRP. He's great. He's been awesome. So, E, what have you been before we get our guests on? We have a fucking awesome show today. But what have you been checking out or listening to? Like, cause yo, I've been listening to some crazy shit. I want to shout out a few things real quick. So yo, first I want to shout out Sutter Kane.
Sutter Kane.
Yeah, our boy. He just got After the World Goddess, which is his new album. He's running a pre-order for that. So he's a cool fan. He's become a friend of both of us. So I just want to shout out him.
He hooked you up. You're bad.
Yeah, dude. He hooked me up, which is awesome. So I want to return the favor. Everybody go check his stuff out.
Shout out gang, DJ Bless.
Yeah, check out his interview. We had a great interview with him. And then, yo, E, this, I got to play it for you. I got to send it to you. Dude, this is crazy. This new release from Aaron from Death Threat. He's got a new side project called Pillars of Ivory. That's, yo, it's like hip hop based a little bit. It's like hip hop interludes with the hip hop was done by my boy Griff, I'm pretty sure, from who used to be Connecticut. He's got some dudes from Jay from Mind Forces involved. Yo, this shit is so dope.
I'll hear that.
Yeah, it's called Pillars of Ivory is the name of the band. They did a 7-inch. I think that might be sold out, but it's on Spotify and streaming. E, I'm going to send it to you because it's fucking awesome. And then lastly, too, man, I've been listening to this. My boy Bob got a new podcast called It Came From New Jersey, which is all like music shit from New Jersey. So they go do some crazy shit.
Yeah, listen, Jersey's so fucking crazy and weird, bro.
Yeah, well, yo, listen, dude, these guys are creative, man. So I just want to show a little bit of love to them because they always hook up the podcast and stuff. And they're a brand new podcast, but the guys that are doing it are involved in a lot of shit that like we listen to and stuff. So what have you been checking out?
I've been listening to the Force MDs lately.
Oh no shit! That's awesome.
Old band, but I love Force MDs. They were before R&B, like when R&B fucked with hip hop.
Yep,
they were the first ones to do that. You know what I mean?
That's
they were
awesome.
before New Edition, before all the things. Yeah, they were like 1985, whatever. Tommy Boy Records.
That's dope.
I loved them. So I've been listening to a lot of that.
Well, and we can talk to one of our guests a lot about Tommy Boy Records.
But check this out. I want to say happy birthday to Jay Hoyer's son. He turned 12 years old yesterday.
Happy birthday, Jay.
I want to say the tour is back on with Crown Thorn, Sick With All, and Nostra Front.
We're looking at April, right?
April next year. So it's on, bro. That's going to be something. Also, I'm talking to Colombia today, people in Colombia, about doing a tour in Colombia. I'm going to do Argentina. I'm going to do South America, Chile again.
That's awesome.
Next year, hopefully. Shout out to Ken, 357. Shout out to Echo MPC. Shout out to Culture New York. If you want to buy graffiti supplies, this is a real place owned by real graffiti artists. But my brother, I'm not going to say names or anything, but it's in Queens, in Astoria. I'm going to put it up there. Culture New York.
Yep.
If you need paint and markers and
that's
shit to do art and vandalize and fucking art, go right there and keep it in the community of real graffiti writers.
That's awesome,
none
man.
None of these fake motherfuckers that want to make money on you. They don't give a fuck about the graffiti culture. These motherfuckers are for the culture. So
that's awesome,
Culture
man.
New York. Shout out to them, Queens, baby. I like to shout out also the GLD Casting Company, which is almost done. We just finished me, Lord Jewish, and Chubbs. I want to shout out to Ito from Rochester, my man Ito, and Snack the Ripper. They lay some dope ass verses. So you know, with Roz Dillams and Insane Poetry. Those are the four features we have on the
That's
GLD
awesome,
Cast
man.
Company.
That's yeah, I'm really
underground shit.
Hey man, as a friend, I'm really proud of you, dude, to see how productive you've been, especially with the podcast and recording and dude, staying
yo,
on top of all
you,
this shit.
You listen.
Yeah, next month I'm gonna
Your store.
Yeah, we're gonna next month we're gonna have maybe a little
we got
some news coming, but I want to keep it centered around my boy and the main host of the show here, Ezak. He's been killing it lately. Yo, so E, we got a really good show for the listeners tonight, right? We got two fucking awesome guests.
Great guess.
Our first guest is a friend of yours for a long time and a friend of mine also for a long time. So I'm going to dial him in, so hang on 1 second.
Dial that motherfucker in.
Let me get him in. Okay, guys, and we are back with our first guest of the night, and I'm really excited for this one. Good friend of both of ours. Everybody welcome, Scott Vogel.
Yay! Vogel!
Yo,
who
Scott,
are the other guests?
Dante Ross.
Dante Ross.
Nice.
It's you and Dante Ross. It's a very good episode for our listeners, man. We're in for a treat tonight. So, yo, Scott, thank you so much for joining us on Diablo's Den. I've been asking you to be on for a minute, and this is going to be fucking... We were already cracking up before we started. So, yo, what have you been up to, man? You've been really busy during the break. You got a new podcast going with the band, a site. What have you been up to, man? Because you guys had a bunch of shit going on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess when we discovered that we weren't going to be playing a show for what we assumed would be like 6 months, but now maybe like 60 years, we kind of said, what can we do to stay like in touch with the people, as well as maybe make a little money?
Yep.
Because we all pretty much live off the band. So we put up a website, but we've been a band for like 20 years. So we've got like a lot of old shit, videos, demos.
Yeah
the site is sick, man. You guys are doing an awesome job. The podcast has been a lot of fun to listen to.
And a lot of like buried songs that we just, you know, when we record an album and there's like a 15 song and we kind of just axe it. So we just kind of been
B-sides?
More like C-sides.
C-level? Above. Remember that? C-level or above? Oh, yeah. Terra is A-plus band. A-band. But other bands, the bands that are whack, I call them below C-level.
I don't want to be in that category.
No, never, brother.
Yeah, so just that, and I'm literally in my garage right now. So I live in a one bedroom apartment with my girlfriend, and we luckily just have.
I hear garage. You. I hear same thing right here. One bedroom.
So
in the whole COVID, the past 5 months, I've been one bedroom, me and my lady right here. Either we're fighting or fucking. we're fighting or fucking. After the fight, we're definitely fucking.
This has kind of been like the she's like a florist, so she has like a desk here and like all this. It's like kind of nice when we had a rug and stuff out here. So this is like my escape.
Nice. Yeah, it's amazing.
And luckily, I live in Burbank, so it's like, you know, the suburbs of L.A., it's kind of suburban, so I can, like, walk around and ride my bike, and that's it, man. It's been really nice to, a lot of people hit me up and, like, dude, are you dying to play a show? I'm like, not really. I'm good. Like, if money wasn't an issue,
right. Yeah.
it feels nice to not have a...
Normal? Yeah. You feel normal?
Yeah. Yeah, not so good on the bank account, and I got unemployment, which is really good.
That's awesome.
Yo, I got the
yo,
the
you know,
check
we should
also.
Get, we should get, yeah, I should, Scott, I should get you on Cameo like I did for Ezak. There you go.
This right here is as Cameo as I'll go. Friend Mio.
Yeah, friend no, for sure. Yo, so
I can do a cameo on how to make people think you're straight edge when you're drunk and high at the same time.
I always when I first met him, I thought he was a strange guy.
Well, you know, that's
people
actually,
still.
I want to
remember that.
I want to get into that. So Scott, what's your first memory of meeting Dan? I want to like get this. Scott,
God.
What's the first time you remember meeting or like interacting with Ezak?
Oh, God.
I've got three memories, and I think in order, the very first time, I knew who he was and enjoyed his music, but one time, Three Guns, I was living in Buffalo, and we had like a Buried Alive house,
Like, oh my God!
Three of us lived there. Scarhead played in Buffalo with Vanilla Ice. Somehow, one way or another, we invited you guys to stay at our house. And that's the first time we ever really hung.
But do you remember, was this when I got mitts in the arm lock?
Holy shit, I don't know. I hope not.
When I was hitting your stomach?
For mitts arm.
I put mitts in the arm lock and pulled his stomach up. He couldn't do anything for a half hour, just smacking stomach. In front of everybody. It was fucking insane.
That was the first time. Then I think we toured together, Buried Alive,
yes.
Canderia, VOD.
Speed Dealer? REO Speed Dealer, were they on that?
No. It was Buried Alive, Canderia, VOD.
Oh, my God.
And a memory from that is, and I think the first night, you had probably recognized me a little bit from staying at my house, and Scarhead's about to go on stage, and you turned to me and you handed me your watch and your wallet, and you said, "Watch this while, or hang on to this while I play." And I'm like, "Dude, I don't want this. I'm gonna do it, but like, I don't want this responsibility." But if like you thought there was another like 100 in there, or I have to go to the bathroom, and you see I walked off with your wallet. So I'm just like, okay, please get down. Here's your wallet.
Thank you, bro. That's so funny. That's so insane, dude. I never even think about it, but that's hilarious. We had some crazy tour stories, bro. You seen me at my funniest, but you also see me at my craziest, like survival mechanisms.
There was good times on that tour where it was a straight party, and then there was a couple times when people interfered with the party and got made to left the party.
Oh man, I can only imagine what that was like.
Had a great. Scott has always been a great person, like a straight up person, but music wise, great frontman. He knows how to reach the crowd. He knows how to talk to the kids and everything, and he loves the kids. And one time, he loves fucking hardcore. This guy. Yeah. I remember one time we were at Whiskey Go Go somewhere. I was fucked up. We were drinking, and I was like, and he started talking about, name the people, you know. And I was naming all the people, and like I threatened or smacked or the guys who do drugs,
ruining my life,
ruining his whole thing. He's like, no. I was like, yo, that guy. We beat up that guy, And he's like, no, that guy's a piece of shit. He goes, no, but I couldn't. He loved hardcore so much. In his eyes, I was like, oh, I'm sorry, bro. I had to tell you the truth.
I just thought of something. When you guys first stayed at my house in Buffalo after that VOD, the Vanilla Ice show, you came in my bedroom and I had a huge Gangstar poster on my wall, and you took offense to it. You're like, yo, what's up with that? And I was like, I don't know. I love Gangstar. And you're like, I just had conflict with them or something.
Yeah, we snuffed the yoked up Guru and threw him on the floor. It was like Guru, rest in peace. But he was everyone knows that he was a drunk and he used to talk bad shit. So he tried that shit. One day he tried that shit with us, and we slapped him up. then his bodyguard Mush Lash fell down. They were like, "What's up?" And the cop came out of nowhere. He was like, "Yo, back the fuck up!" And I was like, "Yo," and he's like, "He goes, you all right, Lash?" He goes, "I fucking hate this motherfucker, Guru. He's a bitch." I think the cop hated him. Had some personal beef with him. He goes, "Yo, you want to fuck him up? Fuck him up." I said, "Nah, it's all right, bro. It's all right." He goes, "All right, peace, guys." The cop had our back. A Puerto Rican. He was like, "Yo," he was like, "Fuck this motherfucker." I can't stop laughing. True story, man. So insane.
Yo, that's wild.
I got another story. You just reminded me. The second time, a different time. Now, this is when you're living in Cleveland.
Oh my God! Remember that? Right? Oh.
Three guns, and I remember because you brought up Lash. Three Guns hit me up, and he was like,
"Steak and cocaine, steak and coke, right?
Can can Ringworm and Scarhead stay at your house, in my house? And I was like, I'm going to be out of town. Buried Alive was going to play a show, but yeah. I had my girl Janelle at the time. Yeah. Do you know Janelle, Jay? You must know Janelle, don't you?
I'm sure, maybe in passing.
I think you do. She was like the babysitter and watched my house because I gave, let VOD or the Scarhead and Ringworm stay at my house. And,
oh, God.
And then Frank and Janelle ended up dating for like 5
Oh, years. Yeah! Yo, but, that was like, see what happens? That's crazy. Awkward, that, fucked up.
That second time, you had Lash with you, and when yes. I got home, I found a watch at my house, and I got a hold of you somehow,
yeah.
And it was before all the phones and shit, and I was like, I found a watch at my house, and it ended up being Lash's, and I sent it to him somehow, and I know he got the watch and was liked me for that.
Yeah, like one of my first memories with meeting Scott was, and I've talked to this story to Scott multiple times, but the first time I ever met Scott was when we got to play a show. Was like the second or third Voice of Reason show, and it was with Hatebreed, Despair, Strife, Warzone, and H2O.
Like H2O played?
And Hatebreed played. Yeah, the lineup was like insane, and that was the first time I ever met Scott, and like it was so cool. I gave him like the demo and shit, and then we got to tour Europe with Terror like a long time ago with The Distance and stuff. So it's cool, and like, you know, and I see Scott Amen. Pretty often. I try to make it out to Terror anytime they're in a driving radius within a couple
Terror's
hours.
Terror's amazing. Oh, I love going to see Terror. I still love watching Terror.
Yeah, it's my favorite. It's one of my favorite things. I mean, Scott will tell you, I'll drive out to, I live in Connecticut still, but I drive out to Worcester or New York or New Jersey.
That's where the real metal is, yeah. Worcester.
Yeah. you can't top a good, shout out to all the guys in Terror too, Jordan and all those dudes, you know, just always a good time to see these dudes. Which, but yo, it's funny because Scott. So talking about the new site, one of the episodes where you guys are doing a podcast where you're breaking down all the records, you talk about the guest spot with Ezak.
Okay.
And
what happened? Wait. Yeah, that was with Jamie. That was the craziest time of my life. How crazy is that guy?
Yo, and Jules Jordan too.
So it was cool to bring that full circle. So, yo, E, do you remember doing the guest spot on that Terror record?
I remember it was like an Asian girl's house. Was that, tell me, am I right?
It was Nick's, Nick had a studio in his parents' garage.
All right.
So we didn't know. We just knew Jamie was coming. Somehow we asked Jamie to be on the record. He rolled up to the house in some, I feel like it was a Mercedes SUV or some balling
yes.
car.
Yes.
You and Jules Jordan got out of the car with Jamie.
Yes.
And then we're like, all right, we got a 2-for-1. We got to get Jamie, I don't want to say buy Jamie because I don't think we paid him, but get Jamie and get Ezak too. And you guys came in, ripped the mic, and we had, and that song was like that's still a song we play every yeah. show, every Terror show. Spit My Rage.
With the infamous, like, spit right at the end from Ezak.
yeah, hell yeah.
You know what's crazy? The last time I saw Vogel, they played with Hatebreed in Manhattan, remember?
Do you remember? I was crazy.
Remember? I was like Trevor Perez. I was like, yo, Trevor, I'll bug you out. But do you remember that the dude? So I got there early. So I was like, all right, I did a podcast with Jamie. So he leaves me with these guys, with Scott, and we start drinking. I'm like, fuck
early.
This. Like 5 o'clock. Yo, we were bombed. And I was like, then my girl came. My girl was bombed. And then I was with Jimmy, and I came on stage. We got what you saying? Spit My Rage. I came on stage. These guys killed it. Terror killed it.
We played it like 6 o'clock.
Yo, listen. Then all of a sudden, Hatebreed played. Then I went to sing something, and the new roadie guy was like, "Hey, can't come here." It was like a problem between me. I was like, "Yo, I was being real nice." So at the end of but the guy was being a dick straight up. So at the end of the night, I go. Jimmy goes, "I want to go say what's up to the guy." Just be like, "Hey," I was like, "What's up?" And he was like, "What's up?" I was like, "I'm, you know, I'm friends with Jamie." I'm saying next time that happens, there's gonna be a different. I'm gonna do something else different. I mean, I'm not gonna be so nice. But you know, people get. How can I say when people know that me and Jamie are boys, especially in the music, Ice Pick. You know that he was my manager. Just don't. You don't have to be a dick. You don't have to be a tough guy. It's like we all know each other, right? You know, we all know that's the outcome is going to happen if the switch goes on. You mean so?
The switch was ready that night. I could see it. I saw
Terror the next night, or maybe a night or so after, and we were talking about how crazy that was.
It was amazing watching Terror in New York City. Fucking kill it.
That's awesome.
Like,
yeah.
Little kids were going fucking nuts. They destroyed everyone. Everyone there was great, but Terror took that show.
Yeah, they were fucking awesome, man. So one of the other things, Scott, that you do that's pretty cool, you do this with a couple other people, but you do Pressure Drop. I just picked up the new issue.
Oh, shit.
This is dope, dude. So I was really excited. Tell us a little bit about this, man, because I think that this is so cool considering everything you do that you still like. Put shit like this out. You know what I mean? It's awesome, man.
Well, thank you for sending me your zine, too. That was really cool.
Thank you for helping me get it done, dude. Appreciate it.
The good part about stuff like that is it comes out looking nice and it's really slick, but I have nothing to do with that. I just send some... Just like it was hard for me to figure out how to get on the phone with you guys, there's no way I can lay a fucking fanzine out on a computer. So I can send some interviews out and do some stuff like that and kind of ask some questions to bands that I like. But I can't take much credit for the way it looks. But, it came out really cool. It's got cool shit. There's a cool interview with Hoya in there.
Hoya Rock.
Vinny Paz is in there, and
yeah, Paz.
It's cool shit. So anybody that's into hardcore, I'm sure.
Yeah, man, it's done really great. And the thing is, I know you say you don't design it, but I mean, obviously, it's put together with a bunch of people. You do it with Andrew from Strife, right? Is involved.
Yeah, and my man Patrick.
And Patrick,
Reaper Records.
Shout out Reaper forever, man.
Dude, shout out to Andrew and Patrick.
Yeah, shout out to Reaper because I've been spending so much money. He's been breaking out all the good stuff out of the vault, and it's so hard to not buy all this stuff. I'm like, so I don't mind. I've been buying some stuff from Kitzel. But yeah, man, everybody can get this, I think, at warrecords.com. Obviously, I'll have the link. I wanted to show this because it is so cool.
Thank you. I
just picked up my copy, bought it to support. You know, guys, support your friends, especially when they're doing shit like this in times like this. The zine's fucking awesome. So there'll be a link for going on that. So, Scott, what else has been going on, man? Fill us in, because I can tell that both of you are cracking up already like there's something funny. So I'm going to let you guys have at it a little bit.
I don't got anything specific on my mind. I'm just thinking about older people in hardcore that don't give a fuck about too much that can have fun, you know? That's all
it comes down to. I always, you know, I come from different backgrounds of the graffiti, street shit, fucking this stuff. But I'll always be a hardcore kid, no matter what. That's the scene that accepted me for who I am and made me, really. So it's just funny that when I see you, I'm like, oh, this guy fucking... It's like, you remind me of when I first, like, I was in... my life was hardcore. Like, it still is. But I'm saying, but my life, it was hardcore. Like, I didn't give a fuck about fucking bitches or fucking... They have a kid back then. So it was like, just, you know what I mean? And just, it's like, I was so happy that we did that tour together. But it's like... No one can talk about the story that we saw. No one has ever understood life until they went on tour with Puerto Rican Mike. I mean, like that's a whole different. I always look at people. I'm surprised that like White Owl, these like Scarhead wasn't Me Too back then. This thing is crazy. You're canceled. These motherfuckers were crazy. If there was a camera following me in my early years, I would have been in jail already for like 30 years. It's insane. It's insanity, the stuff we used to do.
I know that both of you know that I'm like positive and happy and clean cut, but when the door shuts, you guys seem to. The ugly Scott.
Well, it's crazy too because both of you guys both toured like a lot when it was like pre-internet. But I'm saying even all the bad things and things aside, like, dude, you guys really put in the work when it mattered. When it wasn't like, I mean, you know, obviously now there's the internet and those things are beneficial, but you guys put in the work, like grind on the road and, you know, playing those shows and shit like that and touring together when it was like very hard to do, man, booking shows.
Yeah,
like,
but Vogel took over after with Jamie. You mean he was like, he was the next, so he was in Hatebreed, then all of a sudden Trevor came and took that. You mean just there's always the guys under that. So they paved the way. Like these guys worked hard. Vogel worked real hard.
Yeah, yeah. Watching
promoters and stuff, watching your relationships with promoters and business people in the industry. It's hard, man. It's hard to fucking, you know, especially if you, it's not only Scott Vogel, which Vogel's the face, but it's a whole band. Yeah, I mean, and to be that face of that band is a lot. Especially Vogel has like animals in his band too. You know what I mean? So it's like, I was supposed to, I had to talk to people, but I wasn't even that bad. The guys in my band were horrible. You know what I mean? They just knew my face, so I get blamed for everything.
Let me ask you a little something about touring and just because, again, you guys were terrors synonymous with being on the road. Like,
yeah.
What are you hearing, like, in the stratosphere of, like, shows or anything coming back? I mean, is that – have you heard anything? I mean, like, Ezek just let us know that their tour's coming back in April.
21.
21. Yeah. What's Terror looking like, or have you heard anything?
I'll be honest, I haven't I'm hearing the same thing. We have a potential tour to go to Europe in April. That's the first thing we're talking about.
Cool.
But good.
I haven't really been trying so hard to get information because every time I watch the news or talk to someone, I find something. I hear something totally different.
Right.
So instead of like making myself crazy, I've kind of just
waiting for the news.
Because I'm really I'm like a super organized person. Like, I got all these lists of things I want to do and shit I got to get done in my life and shit I got to get done in the band, and I kind of just like put a pause on it because at first I was trying to get a gauge on when are we going to play again, when can we do this, how can we got to keep the merch stores stocked, and then I found out a lot of the merch stores aren't working. And then I'm like, we gotta talk to our agent. And they're like, well, you can't even book a tour right now because half the venues you book by 6 months from now are unfortunately going to be shut down. So I've kind of just like...
That's so foul, right? How foul is that?
I feel so bad for like barbers, anyone playing music, tattoo artists, like all these people that have built this career and business for 20 years and now... They might lose it. That's horrible, man.
You know what? You know what? Yesterday, how I found out the world is fucked. I was walking. I went into Modell's yesterday and out of business.
Closed down Mad Modell's over here.
Listen, everything gone, and I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna buy myself a basketball. So I went in there, no basketballs, only volleyballs and tennis balls left. Wow. In my hood, they don't play that fucking shit. They don't play volleyball. I was like, yo, they took all the basketballs. I was like, fuck, you know?
Yeah, fucking crazy, man.
Modell's out of business.
Crazy, man. Scott, you also, too, outside of Terror, you're working, you have a side project that is super cool called World Be Free that you do with Sammy. Andrew from Stripes also in that band, right?
Yep, it was... It also had Arthur from GB, but yep. He was on the first record. But he's a great guy. Watching someone like that play bass, not to take away from any of the bass players that I've ever been in a band with, but he's like a bass player.
Yeah, he's such a good guy too.
Yo, Scott. Yeah, go ahead.
We recorded a new thing for Revelation, and it's supposed to come out, but it's kind of just like. At the pressing plant, waiting.
Because people can't work and stuff at the plants right now. Scott, what was that like for you as somebody like coming up in our scene, especially like you and I have talked about just being fans of hardcore. What was it like getting to record a record with those dudes? Like, I mean, you must have just been like, "Fuck, this is awesome," right?
So crazy. Like watching Sammy play drums and just, he's super, Sammy's like super musical. And yeah. I mean, I can scream loud and jump on stage and have energy, but I'm not really great at timing. And
yeah.
He's telling me, make your voice go higher here and all this shit. And it takes a lot of work. And at first it feels really uncomfortable, but in the end, his ideas are always amazing. And I'm like, fuck, I wish I was smart. I wish I knew what I was doing.
Nah, that record was super cool, man. Especially like, again, dude, as somebody who's been like, I hate saying the word like a fan, but as somebody who's been, a fan of all your bands and through like Despair, Slugfest, Spirit
Thank
Alive,
you.
Like all that shit.
Despair!
Man. Yeah, Despair was so awesome.
Oh, shit!
Buried Alive and shit. It was cool to hear you do something so much. It was like melodic and cool and different, man. You sounded really good on it. So if anybody who listens to our show who maybe didn't know that Vogel had that project, they have a record on Rev, so check that out. It's got Sammy in and a bunch of cool people.
That's dope.
And then Vogel, you also too secretly... I don't know if it's secret, but you got a Buried Alive record coming out, right? On Bridge Nine. Shout out to Chris Wren.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Oh,
that's
shit.
Awesome. I forgot. I didn't realize that when we were recording that comes tomorrow.
Make a long story short, I never thought I'd play a show with Buried Alive, and World Be Free played a show in Buffalo with Judge, and all the guys from the band were there, and two of them I hadn't talked to in like 15 years. The band did not end in a good place, and we ended up in the basement of the venue partying and being a little crazy and just like putting our bullshit aside and talking through it and joking about it. And then Joe Hardcore really wanted us to play This Is Hardcore for a few years, so
yeah.
Finally we did that, and then we wrote a couple fucking songs, so here they are.
We were just talking about. Really quick before we jump back in, Scott, we were saying like how Ezak needs to get Mark McGrath from fucking Sugar Ray to retweet him so that we can get more cameos.
Yo, that's my boy, nigga. Shout out to Mark McGrath. You're laughing, but I was just telling Jay that I'm gonna do I'm doing a 5-song EP for Scarhead. We're recording next month. We signed Force Five Records. And the name of the song is called Scarhead. The name of the EP, Generators of Violence.
That's true.
Hard.
That's true. No, but the only two people in the house is Mark McGrath and Scott Vogel. That's it. How hard would that be?
One thing we didn't talk about. Are we rolling?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I sang on the Scarhead cover record.
I was just talking about it.
Right before that.
Yes.
He said he was like on the Outburst cover. Yeah.
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 So, Scott, what do you remember about doing that?
Actually, I do have a funny memory about another thing now.
Okay. Please share.
Yeah.
So, I can't remember where I did it, but anyways... awesome to be on the record and an awesome song. But
thank you.
I did this song with you live once in
yes.
France at a festival with Obituary played and all.
Oh
things.
My God! I was nervous. Yeah. I was gone that day. I remember
before their set, Ezak came over to came to me and was like, yo, can I have a baseball hat, a terror hat? I'm going to wear it on stage. I was like, yeah. So I grab one and give it to him. First song, he goes up on stage. We're Scarhead. Throws the hat in the crowd. Like 2 seconds. 2 seconds into the set.
Yo, I would have said, I remember that day. Because it was a big festival. And I think Homeboy from fucking Integrity was there.
No.
Yes, he was there. His band. Dwayne was there.
I heard you say something nice about Integrity recently.
Yes. I'm just saying.
It was on this podcast.
I listen. Let bygones be bygones. But you know what I'm saying? I saw he was there. I saw him. I remember that someone was saying, but me and Trevor Perez got banged out hard. And I was like, let's go. And I remember... The dude was there, and I was like, I was like, oh man, I feel bad. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I didn't want, you know what I mean? Like, because anything can ignite something else in that part. You know what I mean? Like,
even if, yeah, the switch was.
Switch could go off 8 seconds. You know, because if someone came up to me like, hey, I'm sorry about that, I'd be like, fuck you, nigga, get away from me. You know what I mean? Because you almost killed me. Like, it's like, you understand what I'm talking about? So, but that, I remember playing. That's the thing I remember someone else gave me a. I gave Trevor Perez a Scarhead pulley zip code, like running track suits. And it was just weird to see him with a Scarhead track suit. Like, you know how ill that nigga is. It's like, but I can't stop laughing. I did a song with Vogel and he killed it, man. He killed it. It's like, yo, when I do vocals with these other guys, I love doing guys to hold their own. And Vogel fucking always holds his own. More than other than people who get the recognition.
Dude, I've been blessed.
I can scream loud. That's all I can do. Scream.
I've been blessed to invite myself twice into the studio to get to do gang vocals on Terror Records. It's a blast.
It must be hilarious, right?
It was like as soon as, especially on this last one, like shout out to Yvonne. I saw that you guys were in Jersey, and you know, Yvonne has no shame, whereas me, I won't even ask somebody because I always feel like I'm bothering. I texted Yvonne. I said, please ask if we could go do backups. So we got to go, and it was fucking, it's awesome, and it was a good time to hang out with you guys. So, yeah, so that's pretty much a wrap with Vogel, unless we got anything else. I mean, dude, I could talk for hours about a bunch of shit, but I don't know how much of it could be on the air.
Okay.
I'm looking forward for the second half of this, the Dante Ross. I want to hear what he's got to say. That guy's got cooler stories than me. That's
no way, man. Listen, man. Vogel.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to you, dude. Yeah. No way, man. Shout out to you, dude, for doing this for us.
Vogel, thank you so much, brother.
One of the best.
Thanks for having me.
Shout out. And I got to say, man, one of the coolest things about Terror is that they still... Unlike a lot of legacy bands, they still support young bands. They take out young bands.
They haven't sold out.
I've seen so many cool new bands. I wouldn't know if it wasn't for Terror and those dudes. So, dude, Vogel, again, shout out to you guys for fucking really doing it the right way, man. Big up to you. Fucking appreciate it.
Thanks for all the kind words and for having me, guys.
Of course, man. Where can everybody catch up with you online? Plug the new Terror site. Sure. Plug all the goodies really quick.
The new Terror site is sticktight.la, and me personally, I'm on Instagram. I am finally.
Wait. And,
it's not. It's stupidity. It's nothing. And then that's it. Terror's got a Facebook and all that shit. But
awesome, man. Yeah, and we'll plug all that. So I'm glad that we got to get you guys together finally on this. We've talked about it for a long time and exchanged some stories. So, Vogel, thank you so much. I miss you. I hope I get to see you soon, man.
I will hit you up the song. It only two features, Scott Vogel and Mark McGrath on the new Scarhead.
I'm ready to go, baby.
I love it. Thanks, Scott. We'll talk to you soon, man. Thank you. And we're back with our second guest of the night. I'm really excited for this one. Everybody who knows me knows I'm a fucking music industry, quote unquote, geek. I love talking about labels and history and all of this shit. Being one of those people myself, look up to people like Dante, who works on some fucking really cool shit. So everybody, please welcome to Diablo's Den, one of Danny's old good friends and a guest, fucking Dante Ross.
What's up, man? How are you guys doing? What's cracking?
Dante,
how are you, man? Thank you so much for joining us on the Corona Chronicles, man. How you been during this whole shitty thing going on?
I'm as good as can be, all things considered. You know what I mean? It's like, what are we going to do, right? We're all dealing with fucking something that's like uncharted territory. So let's try and keep the PMA, man. Try and stay in the gym, get outside, fucking go hike, hit the beach, hang out with my wife, like do yoga. It's mad weird, right? Yoga. trying to turn into John Blood Clot. Not really, but you know, be healthy and keep it together. And, you know, I think just trying to stay positive, man. You know, I try and stay in the day. I deal with it one day at a time. That's the only way I can.
That's awesome, man. So Dante, for our listeners who aren't super familiar with you, give us what we call just the elevator pitch on just, I mean, dude, you have such a storied past coming from, and we're going to touch on all of those things, but real quick, just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
You know, I'm a New York kid, grew up in the Lower East Side, and I was a punk rock kid, ran around with, like, the Beasties and Luscious Jackson girls, and John Bloodclaat, and all those guys were around, and I kind of moved over to loving hip-hop at some point. I ended up getting a job in the music business because of my friend the Beastie Boys, and I signed a bunch of bands, including, like, Brand Newbie and Pete Rock, CL Smooth. Sick. I produced around that time, like, Third Bass. I worked with them, and Grand Poobah, and I signed Brand Nubians, and Old Dirty Bastard, Del the Funky Homo Sapien.
Yeah, man, craziest resume. Like, it doesn't even scratch the surface.
You know, Busta Rhymes and a whole bunch of other shit. And I also made this record with this guy, Everlast, Little Mix, that sold some records. You know, Swighty Ford Sings the Blues. And I've just been around music most of my adult life and prior to my adult life. I feel like Danny is in the same category, kind of. We're street kids and we grew up loving music, right? So I'm a music fan. Danny's like a music fan too. So being a music fan, my natural job was to kind of end up being an A&R guy. And right. I figured out very young how to scam my way into every club for free. I got to see every free show. I saw a million shows for free. So you know, it was just kind of a natural course for me to do it. And it's funny because my whole life, I know the doorman everywhere. Like, whenever I go to show, even like I'm in New York, I go to like Irving Plaza, I know all those guys because they worked at Roseland, they worked every show. So,
yep.
I somehow, since I was a kid, knew how to get in everywhere for free. And that's how I kind of got my job.
That's fucking awesome, man. So,
also, Dante, as being like a music guy, also like me and Dante, we both, I love playing ball. Dante's ill in ball. Back in the day, he was one of the illest.
Right, I was nice in basketball. It's true. I took it very seriously. And you know, I was a skateboarder, too. So
yeah.
I was an athlete and a New York kid, you know. And like,
and a graphite writer, a graffiti writer, too.
That as well.
System.
I did that, too. Yeah. You know, I always say the things you did if you were a cool white boy when I was growing up was you wrote graffiti and you skateboarded. And then you probably got into punk rock somewhere along the way.
And you know, it's funny too, Dante. One of the most interesting things, and maybe you can talk about this through your career too, it always seems like a lot of the hardcore punk rock kids always end up working at the labels and doing a lot of cool shit. Man, I mean, I can't, you know, I spent a couple of years at Sony, and I can't tell you how many times I'd run into, like, you know, like I would see Bill Wilson randomly or just random people, right. You know, that you just, they're like, you almost like, wait, what are you doing here? I'm doing this. And you know, it's funny that everybody comes from this, like, you know, melting pot of ideas and, you know, DIY stuff. Talking about that, Dante, you were exposed to some of the coolest bands. Like, talk about some of those early shows. Like, I mean, the bands you've seen.
Yeah. We, you know, like I got into punk rock. I was really young. I was one of those kids and I was like, you know, I was like, God, there's got to be something fucking better than Led Zeppelin. What the fuck? Like, you know, enough with fucking Journey and all this bullshit. And like, I was literally waiting for something to come along. And I didn't know about the Stooges. I didn't know about all the proto-punk bands yet. And I went to see The Clash when I was in ninth grade. I saw The Clash and I'd heard them on the radio. And I was blown away. And then, you know, like I borrowed the Sex Pistols record from a friend of mine, and I kind of never looked back. So I started going to shows early.
That's cool.
And literally, like, I saw some of the old, like, monster rock bands. Like, I saw ELO and Yes and, like, Pink when I was, like, a little kid. But I also saw Parliament Funkadelic when I was, like, 13.
I know that you love – I have a crazy story, but I just want to say that Dante – one time Dante told me about him and Bootsy Collins used to talk all the time.
That was my man. That was my boy. It's true. He used to write me letters, and I saved them because he signed his name with the sunglasses with the star around the O.
Oh, that's sick, yeah.
That was so cool, and I love Parliament Funkadelic as a kid. And I always think, before hip-hop, the blackest shit was P-Funk. Yeah. That was like, if you saw dudes walking through the radio, they're playing P-Funk, you know, and you were like, okay. And so I love funk, you know. I was like, I always love funk, and I always think this too with punk rock. Like, black music was always cool. Like, Rick James was cool as punk rock as we were, right?
Yeah.
So kind of like it went outside of the borderlines where look, man, like Led Zeppelin, I learned to love them again later in life, but there was like a long period of my life when they were the enemy, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so you know, I got to see The Clash early on. I saw Sham 69. I saw the specials a bunch of times. I love
that
Scott stuff. Back then,
it was incredible. I saw them in 1980 at the Diplomat Hotel. Whoa. The stage was like, you know, 2 feet off the ground. I saw Madness at Tier 3. Blood Clot was a doorman. Like, this
was one.
Like, so I'm a little kid, you know. And I'm a little kid, and we're going to all these shows. And then I discovered the Bad Brains. Like, my friend John Paredes, I was kind of like, I wasn't full punk rock yet. I was kind of like a new wave kid. You know, I had like, kind of like I had a flat top. I was like, fuck, I'm wearing a bowling shirt. I was that kid. And fucking my boy John Paredes, whose sister, Melissa, she went out with Daryl. And he was like, yo, you got to see this band, the Bad Brains. And I was like, whatever. And he's like, nah, man, check them out. We skated around, and me and my friends like skated over to the show. And I remember I saw like my friend Miles Kelly was there, and a couple other kids who I kind of knew. And they used to be like skateboard regular kids like me. And they were like looking punk rock now. And I was like, oh shit, this is bugged out. Graffiti. It's like Mackie's crew. Like all the dudes were in that band Frontline. Let me make sure. Okay, I may lose you guys for a second. I'll log back in.
Okay.
Because my network is fucked up.
Okay. Yo, E, fix your microphone too, Dan. E.
Oh, my microphone's off.
Yeah, you sound really far away.
Now? How about now?
It should be better now. I should be on now.
Now? So, sounds better?
What's up?
Dante, you're good. E, you sound really far away. Put your mic back on.
Sorry, yeah, I was on. I lost my 5G for a second for some reason.
It's okay. Hang on 1 second. Get lit. E just sounds really far away.
I got you. I took off that.
You took the mic off. Yeah, put it back on.
Hold on. Damn.
That's better. Much better. Okay, great.
There you go. So I was I went to see the Bad Brains, man, and I gotta say it was like, you know, seeing the Clash is one thing, but like the Bad Brains made the Clash look like the Bay City Rollers or something to me. I was like,
the energy.
Oh man, it was like I never honestly, like to this day, I've really only a few things have come close to that, and nothing's ever topped it. Just the energy, the cathartic energy, it changed my entire way I look at
outlook yeah, like a live band, like when a band could deliver live, that's how you know those motherfuckers are real shit, man.
I mean, I still think that the Bad Brains, like, they never, the closest they came is the Worker set, but they still never, as great as that is,
yeah,
how great they were live is never on wax, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can't.
I mean, I became a Bad Brains fanatic, and you know, me and all my friends fucking were, and this show is at also 171A. It's before they had recorded the album. They only had me to come out, right?
Oh, that's crazy.
So we, you know, we became friends with them, like, and we all hung out at this place. Rat Cage Records was downstairs, then it moved. Yeah. And so that's where we hung out. We became friends with the Bad Brains, and it was like our version of what was going on in England, I guess. And in England, they loved reggae, right? So in America, and I love reggae too. I loved all the old rockers back then, but rap was our reggae, right? So we, like, Rapper's Delight or whatever was out, that was what we were fucking with. And after a while, hardcore got a little boring to me. I'll be honest, like, I had this friend, John Berry, rest in peace. He was in the Beastie Boys. He was like my best friend. And after we went to a show one night, like, we saw MDC, and they were like, whatever, but we all went back to the studio in Westbeth, all the frontline guys, and we were like drunk and like wrestling around. And John was like, yo, you ever think, like, there's no fucking girls hanging out? Like, we gotta get. Guys, it's a little gay, like, running around with their shirts off. Like, where's the girls at, you know? And you're right. So he convinced us we should start hanging out at Danceteria, so we did. And through that, we kind of like moved around musically. And I guess hardcore, like the Bad Brains broke up like 17 times already, right? They were like a reggae band. it was all getting convoluted. And like, no, you know, Agnostic Front, like, I like those guys, they're my friends, but musically, it wasn't my cup of tea necessarily.
Right? It was like straight up, like, more straightforward too back then, like the punk rock and to like the thrash guitar player.
Right.
That's how. Right. And later on, I met Dante when he was like heavy doing the A&R stuff. But when we got into hardcore, like my generation, Matt Freddy, we were already destroying the scene. And people were like,
you guys were right. And so when it started, fucked it all up. Roger and them were fucking it up, right? And we were friends with them. This is what's so funny. Like, we were city kids, so we're, you know. we're maybe a little more progressive the way we think, right? We're not as tough as these guys, you know. Like, honestly, we weren't tough. I wasn't that tough. So, you know, and like Jimmy, it's funny because Jimmy was my boy. Like, I knew Jimmy before punk rock. I knew Jimmy when I was new wave and had my like, Christian.
Oh, that's crazy.
Going to Queens, skating at the pyramids. And I remember, always will remember that. He's like, yo, Don, I remember you were like new wave and you were like cool before I came to this. Jimmy's like my brother forever. He was really down with our whole crew, like the BCs, like our whole thing. And so Murphy's Law was great to me also. I love them. Tougher and tougher and tougher, we kind of moved around, right? We're looking for girls and we're like, you know, kind of like pretty boys a little bit. And so we ended up, though, like really loving rap music. We started going to the Roxy. So we would literally see the Bad Brains on Friday. I mean, on Friday, we go to the Roxy. Saturday, we'd see the Bad Brains at CB's. Like, this was like our routine. And we loved rap music. And all this other stuff was coming to play, different kind of music. And I guess I liked some stuff that was softer. I was like liking the Talking Heads and even the Cure, all this other stuff.
Cure is amazing.
You know, that stuff was all great music, and I saw all those bands. I saw everyone. I saw, because I could get in free to Danceteria, so I saw every band that played there, and everyone played from like Bauhaus to the Selector like the Cure, Susie and the Banshees. I saw all these bands. I saw the Fall, the Buzzcocks. I saw like I've seen every punk rock band, because we also would go to Irving Plaza to a lot of shows.
Yeah,
and the art. Somehow they let the girls from Luscious Jackson, Gabby Glazer, had the guest list. She's like, oh, you're on the list. So we go to every show. I mean, I hardcore for me had kind of wound down. Like at the Bad Brains breaking up and Black Flag, once they got too weird, I kind of stopped listening. Right? They got too arty. I was like, what? So hip hop starts becoming more and more prominent. And for all of us, me and all my friends, and I swear to God, we heard Sucker MCs, and to me, when I heard that record, it was the most punk rock shit I'd ever heard. And I'd already seen a bunch of rap music, right? Like, I'd seen The Fearless Four and Afrika Bambaataa, but those guys kind of dressed like a broke Rick James, right? It was I was like, what the fuck is this?
Mad Max.
Yeah, it was a crazy look with the nine belts. It's like... fucked up. And so red leather shit, they're just like Eddie Murphy, kind of dressed like that. So I went to see Run DMC's first show. Well, I heard the record, I lost my fucking mind.
Yeah,
I remember I bought it, but I went to see their first show like in Manhattan, which was at Danceteria, and I went with the Beasties, and all of us went, and like it was the craziest. They only did three songs. They only had three songs. It was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. And what I remember the most about it was rap music was kind of a little musical. They were like anti-music. It was like, and they dressed just like the audience. So I was like, I wasn't smart enough then to realize this, but basically it was black punk rock, right? So black punk rock, but I didn't put, you know, I can say that now. Then I didn't know that. Just something appealed to me on the same cathartic level that the Bad Brains appealed to me.
Right.
And I signed on. I was like, this is the new thing. This is what I'm into. And you know, my friends, you know, that's kind of where our cultural shift went. And, you know, we already wrote graffiti. And look, I had half my friends are black and Puerto Rican growing up, and, you know, because of where I grew up. So for me, it was like natural, right? It was just like, you
natural
know,
step. Natural right. Progression.
We just fell right in. And you know, the Beasties, like, I don't care what they say, is like they're rapping. Like, it was kind of a joke at first. Like, they're kind of like, this rap shit's funny. Yeah. And then they became more and more enamored and part of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah, definitely.
So Dante, can I talk? Let's talk a little bit about your journey from like you said, being a fan of music. What was your first thing? Production? Is that how you got into like?
No, I was an A&R guy for first. I mean, I was a tour manager. So when I was really young, I went on the road with the Beasties, and their road manager made me his slave. This dude who passed away named Sean Karasoff, the captain. And if you ever read any of the Beasties book and all that, he's in there pretty prominently. So he had worked with Madness. He was English. And we all looked up to him. And he was like a little dude. He was tough as nails. Like, he was ill. So he made me a slave on the road. And taught me, what I didn't know is he was teaching me how to be a road manager.
Nice.
And so we got off the road, and I was working for Lior at Rush Productions. And you know, they managed the Beasties and Run DMC LL and blah, blah, blah. And Eric B. and Rakim had just signed them. They needed a road manager. And Sean was like, Leo or Dante can do that shit. He was my slave for like a year. He can do so they gave me the job and I went out there and I commanded respect pretty quick somehow. I just pretended I was Sean. I just acted like him. So from there, I did that for a year and I came back and I got a job at Tommy Boy at B&A. And I started as the office messenger. I was a gopher. I would fuck up Lior's lunch every day. He'd be like, I said shrimp fried rice, not pork fried rice.
I want to talk. I want to, you fucking asshole.
Right?
I want to ask you a little bit about working with Lior before we get into the Tommy Boy thing, because I know that's part of your story, man. What was that like? Like, especially in
crazy. That guy was out of his mind. He was like the most aggressive fucking guy. He was fucking nuts, larger than life. And, you know, I got to say this one thing I'll say about Lior. That's the most fearless motherfucker I've ever seen. I mean, it helps when you're 6'5", right?
Yeah.
But he was fearless. Like, I've seen the most gangster dudes screaming at him, and he's like, pays it no mind. So and he taught me a lot, man. I learned how to have thick skin. I learned that things won't always go your way, that sometimes you got to suck it up and then never buckle. That's the main thing I learned. And I kind of already had that mentality. You never buckle. You buckle one time, you're going to buckle forever.
Right.
And he's that guy. And he kind of reinforced that in me. And so I got off the road and it was like no job for me. So I started trying to get a job and I ended up getting an A&R job at Tommy Boy. And it goes back to me being on the road because Daddy-O from Stetsasonic was on the road with us. So they were signed to Rush, but they weren't A-list.
Right.
But I had to take everyone to radio in the morning. I would get those dudes and bring them with me.
Oh, take them on like the promo cool. tours and shit. That's cool.
Promo, exactly.
That's mad cool.
Yeah, because they were my people. Because they were fucking mad cool. Because he was my man, and me and Daddy O started like. I'm always interested in theology, which is weird, because I'm raised Catholic. My father's Jewish, and religion is pretty much bullshit. But I always believed in God. So he, me and my God, like he was a Muslim, and we would talk about, she gave me a lot of books. He gave me this book, The Power of Positive Thinking. I mean, The Power of Magnetic Thinking by Bhagwan Bhagnish and all these like philosophical books. And he was like my mentor. So he got me the job at Tommy Boy.
That's awesome.
Oh, I didn't know
he
that.
Told them like, yo, you should hire my man Dante. He knows everybody. So I ended up getting the job really thanks to Daddy-O. And one of the first things I ever did was help do A&R on Stetsasonic's record in Full Gear.
That's so sick, man. And you had some really big records at Tommy Boy. Can you talk a little bit about those? Yeah, talk a little bit about those, because those are fuck. I mean, for our listeners, they probably don't even realize that you might have worked on some of these records.
De La Soul. So De La Soul, they were going to get signed to Tommy Boy. And actually, so Daddy-O gets me the interview and they played me. Monica Lynch played me De La Soul, and I fucking thought it was amazing. So she told me I got the job right before Christmas, and she was like, in that group that you liked? I was like, yeah. She's like, you're going to be their A&R guy.
That's awesome.
So I get the job, and I get De La on my lap. So I'm working with De La, and while I'm working with De La, I'm hanging out this club called the Latin Quarters like all the time, every Friday night, and that shit was, let me tell you something, there was only two other white people I've ever seen there, and that's my friend Dave Funk and Klein, who died, and MC Search. MC Search, we have, you know, whatever, Search is Search. So, he's often maligned, but I love him. And I got to say that because I don't think people say that enough about him. I meet this guy. This guy comes up to me, and he looked too soft to be there. And he was like, yeah, hey, Ross. And I was like, yeah. He's like, yo, I'm DJ Mark, the 45 King. And I was like, what? Because I thought it was going to be like a brolic because his beats were crazy. And Riddler played all the promos. He asked me if I wanted to hear some shit. And he handed me his sweaty headphones. Yeah. I'll never forget that. And I had his soggy headphones on. And I was like, yo, you got to come and bring me groups. And he called me with Fat Five Freddy. And him and Freddy played me Latifah over the phone.
Oh, that's awesome.
They played me Wrath of My Madness. And then I was like, yo, come into the office. Bring her and bring all your artists. And he did. And I don't know why Fat Five Freddy wasn't there. Freddy was my man, too, back then.
Shaquem was there?
Fix your Mikey.
Nah, Shaquem wasn't there yet. Fat Five Freddy. Shaquem wasn't in the picture yet. They brought Latifah to us, and we signed it right away. We signed it.
Dante, like, when you heard Latifah right away, you were like, you knew?
Right away. Because one, she was, first, she did something, she combined a lot of things. She was singing, rapping, and had a little dance hall in there. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I was like, oh, shit. And 45 King. So that to me, I never heard a female who rapped that good up to that point. And really, I'm not a fan of female rappers. I've only really liked three or four ever, and that's probably like Latifah, MC Light, Lauryn Hill, right? So, yeah.
That's a list, though.
Yeah, right. That's the ones to me. So we signed her, and then later on, Digital Underground landed in my lap. This guy named Ed Strickland brought me Digital Underground. He was like, yo, this record's really cool. It's from the Bay Area. He's a radio guy or indie guy. And he brought it to me, and I was like, oh, we need to sign this. And we signed Digital Underground.
Yeah, that's such a, and it was crazy because I remember buying the single. And that shit was just fucking huge. And I mean, one of the things that I was saying to E before you came on was I've always remembered the Tommy Boy logo being on all my singles because you guys had like the freestyle collections with TKA and all of the fucking shit that I still love freestyle. I still listen to that shit.
I love freestyle.
Hip hop clubs for like music, but then we go to the freestyle club for Puerto Rican girls.
Yeah, of course.
I had a Puerto
Rican girlfriend. Who was in that group, Seduction? She had mad big hair. I love Spanish girls, so that was like freestyle.
So Dante, when you heard that Digital Underground single, you were saying that came through a radio indie guy. Was that a lot of how back in the day?
Not really. This guy Ed Strickland was he did indie at a lot of places. We end up hiring him at Tommy Boy, and he was my man. I knew Ed because Ed was a promo guy from DC actually. And I knew him from being on tour, Eric B. and Rakim.
All right.
Man, Easy Ed Strickland, he had a Jerry Curl. He was ill. Easy Ed Strickland brought us the record, and it was Do What You Like. No, it was Underwater Rhymes. Wow. Their first one, it was on TNT Records, and we signed it. And the first one we put out was Do What You Like.
But
it wasn't a massive hit. Then I actually left to take my next job at Elektra. Then Humpty Dance comes out and blows up.
Yeah.
I would have got more money.
You had quite the career at Elektra too.
They also let me do what Elektra had no one second guessing me. Let me do what I wanted to do.
That must have been great.
Dante, do you feel like as somebody, and again, this I'm probably just asking for myself, but do you feel like as somebody in the music industry that's really how you were able to excel? That somebody just let you yo, look, man, do your thing, bring it to us, you know, ready to put on a shelf, and we'll fucking go.
So you know, one thing I know having been people's bosses is you got to have belief in your people and you have to either let them fail or win, sink or swim, right? So my boss, Bob Krasnow, who's like a legend, rest in peace, he signed Parliament Funkadelic to Warner Brothers. He let me do my thing. He was like, I trust you. And what people don't know is the first record I put out there was a flop. It was a girl named Shazzy. It flopped. And he didn't care. He's like, I don't care.
That's cool.
Like you'll get one. Don't worry about it, kid. And the second one was Brand Nubian.
That's sick. Yeah.
That's amazing, bro.
Yeah, he's great. He let me sign. The one thing there's two records he didn't let me sign. He didn't let me sign Cypress Hill because we had the Ice-T problem within Warner Brothers.
All right.
Was going to be problematic. Because he was like, he asked me, what is this song about? I said, he's talking about killing a cop who comes in his house.
Yeah.
We can't put the song out. He's like, I think it's cool. You believe in it, but we're not going to be able to do it. So we didn't do that. And the other group I didn't sign was the Grave Diggers. It's a suicide. So he was like, we're not doing that. the Grave Diggers, you know, that might not have been the biggest loss. Cypress was a big loss. Because Cypress would have put us... probably over the top and it would have fit right in with Underwater. And the band I didn't sign on my own accord was House of Pain. And I didn't sign House of Pain because I just thought it would become too problematic with the groups I had signed. Like I could see all my artists who were artists of color being upset at the white boys and making it harder. So I didn't sign it.
But let's connect. Go ahead, E.
I'll just say And then you fucking work with Everlast.
I was gonna say let's connect.
So Mark and me were really tight, yeah. And I was a big champion of Cypress Hill and everything Muggs did, and yes. Those guys all knew that. So
shout out to Muggs.
I mean, yeah. I'm a soul assassin. You know what I mean? I rock with them. It's like on my body, like tattooed. So
yeah.
So I've been rocking with them forever. So you know, they fell into New York. I'm like the first dude they called back in the day, and so you know, I stayed connected to those guys forever. I mean, you know, my back piece is done by Cartoon, like, so I stayed close to those guys forever. And that eventually, in a way, is why I ended up working with Everlast.
Yep.
I mean, me and Everlast were like the same person from different places.
Well,
like we're very, very similar.
Dante, talk a little bit about how the fans and listeners who are listening and don't know what record we're talking about, we're obviously talking about Whitey Ford Sings the Blues. Dante, yeah. Can you tell Ezak and the listeners and myself a little bit about how that record comes together? Again, most people will remember him from Jump Around and that whole thing. Yeah. And then you come out with I remember that being on pretty much, you know, like, I guess it would be like what modern rock radio now.
Yeah.
It was like a staple. I mean, it still is. I feel like he must.
A-Rock record.
Yeah. So how did that all come together, and whose idea was it to like, was that like an A&R thing, or did that project come together done to you, or?
That was definitely your sound, Dante. You mean like that's your the production. Yeah. When I heard that record and just hear records like that, I know your sound.
Right, because it's a combination of all the things I've done and do. It's like, because, you know, I'm a white boy. I grew up like my mom played Neil Young. You know what I mean?
Right. Like when I heard the homegirl from the Brand New Heavies on it, I knew that, like,
right.
That's totally you, CeeLo. All that shit's you, B. I know that music-wise, production-wise, if people don't really understand that artists are great, like, but... Like production is a real key thing. Like if you don't like you meet someone later down the line, and you work with someone like, oh shit, man! Like every time I work with a different producer, you learn something new. And I always or a new engineer, I learn something new, a new trick, another way to do something. So I'm always like taking it in, no matter who it is. And you know what I mean? So, but production wise, you hear stuff, I'm like, oh shit, Dante, that's Dante's magic.
You know, when you say that, because I'm a sponge. When I was a kid, I was around the Bad Brains when they made the first record, right? And yeah. I remember asking Jerry Williams what he was doing. He's like, oh, this is a compressor. You need to learn about this.
Yeah.
And he showed me a compressor when I'm 16 years old. And I mean, I get that. You know, Jerry was like, yo, you know, check this out. And Jerry would like, yo, go run the cable here, go do that. You know, so I was around helping out a little bit, you know, so and I'm like, yo, I'm a sponge. I always pick it up along the way. So the Everlast thing was me and him. I was managing Sadat X, and he had a record he was making for Loud, and Everlast and me linked up somewhere in L.A. We ended up hanging out one night, bugging out. And we had a lot of fun. We got drunk. We just fucking bugging out. So I was like, I love this guy. And we ended up going to the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah. Awesome.
And this is like House of Pain is falling apart. Like, you know, it's like the last record comes out. And I'm in a video, House of Pain video, fed up with your man, Peter Green.
I was just with him like 2 nights ago with him. Dante,
Peter Green is like a woven thread through this entire show because everybody has like a, it's great.
Your man, Peter. So crazy, that guy. Like, and when I met him, you know what he said to me? He goes, Dante Ross, I go, yeah. He goes, you know that scumbag Jerry Dean, huh?
Yeah. Oh, Jerry Dean! I see him everywhere now.
How do you know the guy I used to do stick-ups with? Like, what?
Yo, imagine those two guys together.
Yo, that's too much. That's like a felony waiting to happen.
Oh my God!
You crazy.
So, shout out to Jerry Dean and Peter Green.
Out. I love you guys. I can't hang out with you. So me and Eric, like, so Sadat X does a song with Everlast for that last House of Pain record, and we all end up hanging out a lot. When he comes to New York, we take him out, and you know who we always hung out with? Ezak, Manny Stacks.
Oh, you got locked up.
Yeah, because that's
like, my remember right, your boy. I see Manny Stacks.
That's my right hand. I introduced him to Everlast, and that's our crew. When Everlast comes in, like, Nisa.X, Alamo.
Yeah. Shout out to Manny Stacks.
Stacks. It's a crazy crew. We're very definitely coalition. White trash, Puerto Ricans, black guys. It's a fucked up crew. And so me and Eric become really tight, and he's got a, you know, he breaks up the band. He's still on Tommy Boy, and our friend, my friend Albie, works there. And Eric had always wanted to work with me. He always was like, "Yeah, we should work on some shit." So I gave him a couple of beats, and he liked one, and it became that song "Dollar Bill" that's on the album.
That's a hard fucking song, bang, bro.
That's the first one we did. Then we did another one. I had my man did it for him, and it was "Ends," but it was a rap song, and then. So he was living in my house, like he was staying with me in New York. He just didn't want to be in LA. He was in my house for like months at a time. And I was like, back then I was just like, I was smashing anything that moved, everything. And he was like on my couch, like, Jesus fucking Christ, bro. So I came in one night. This is why I remember this, because if you know me, I don't mess with most of the women I date in my life are Latin or Asian. So I walked in with this white girl I was messing with, and Eric was on the I gotta backtrack a little. So I had acoustic guitar in my studio, and we were working on rap records though, and Eric was like, "Yo, can I borrow this?" I was like, "Yeah, I think it might need a new string." He was like, "No, I'm tuned it up." And he took my I had a Hummingbird. He took it home, and I knew he could play guitar. I knew he could sing a little because I've been in his house. He'd play like Soundgarden songs. He had guitars around and shit. And he liked grunge a lot, which is kind of cool to me too, because I like grunge. And so he took it home. And so I come home with this white chick, Shannon. And he's Irish too. She had the white skin with green eyes. And I walked up the stairs, and Eric was on the couch with the guitar. And he looked at me and said, "Home team?" Yeah, boy. Like that. And she's like, "What's that about?" I was like, "Oh, nothing. And so one thing leads to another. I'm in my bedroom, bong, and I'm hanging out with homegirl, and I'm in my boxers, like, and I hear Eric playing "What It's Like." I hear him playing that shit. And I ran out. I ran out of my box. "What the fuck is that?" He said, "Yo, it's a song I wrote like a year ago." I said, "Yo," he was singing it too. I said, "Do that shit, play that shit again." Played that shit again. I said, "Yo, that shit's dope." He said, "You think?" I said, "Yeah." I said, we should record that." He said, "I don't want to do that." I said, "Why?" He said, "I'm scared that once I do that, I can't go backwards." I said, "Fuck going backwards. Let's go forwards."
That's awesome. Yeah. That's dope.
He said, "Word." I said, yeah. And he was reluctant, but I kept convincing him, like I was working on it. So we went to the studio the next day. I said, "Yo, man," because we had another guitar down there too. And I was like, "Yo, man, play that song for Gamble, my partner, John Gamble." Shout out. Shit. And he played it for him. And John was like, "This shit's dope." And I was like, "Yo, we should record that." And Eric was like, "I don't know, man." I was like, "Yo, we should record that." And I stayed on him for a couple of days. And he came back to the studio again. And I was like, "Yo, man, let's record that." He's like, "Well, I don't know. What are we going to do?" I said, "Yo, I got drums for it." And I kind of almost knew what the tempo was, and I had the SP-1200 set up, and I chopped up that Bismarck E beat.
Yep.
And I was like, "Yo, here's the beat." And he was like, "Yo, that works." And I was like, "Yeah, I know it does." So
yeah, such a sick, what an awesome track, especially at the time, because there was nothing that really sounded like it.
Yeah, right. It was unique, and he killed it. Yo, the vocal that's on the record is his second take. Guitar too, because we recorded it to a 16 track 1-inch that I had in my studio, and we ended up transferring that tape and using that pass. That's exactly what it is. And I think Gamble played bass on it too, if I'm not mistaken, but I can't really remember. But that demo became a song, and then we also recorded 7 years and recorded The Letter. We did them all in a week, and then we gave Tommy Boy the demo, which was 7 years, Dollar Bill, The Letter, What It's Like, and I think that might have been it. I think it was
That's
just those
dope, four. Though.
And we gave, and they all four made the album. And Tommy Boy, I remember Monica Lynch and my man Albie. You remember Albie?
How was that?
He used to be like a party promoter. He was the A&R guy. He's a white boy. All the girls. He was like, all the girls love him. So Albie was the A&R guy, and they called me up, and they were like, yo, we love this. We don't know what the hell it is, but we want you to do the whole thing.
I tell you right now, it started a whole fucking movement.
Yeah.
Artists like that. It's like to me, I always laugh, but I love Everlast. Like he's an underrated musician, but his rhyme style is dope. He's the first guy I ever saw rhyme without writing anything down. You know what I mean? Right there.
He
right
never
there.
Writes anything down.
No, right there, looking at the thing, looking at the computer, and he's like, I got it. I'm like, what you got? And I'm like, and he's like, let's do it. He's amazing.
Like, he's one of them dudes in the studio. He's fast. He has the one thing I always, besides the fact he's a very good songwriter, Everlast has a great sense of rhythm. His sense of timing, you almost never have to punch him. Like, his vocal takes usually first or second is to keep on the album.
He's dope.
He do the thing that I love artists to do. Let me do my thing.
Right.
He'd be like, well, here's my vocals. Do you. I trust you. and I always love that. And usually what I wanted to do was right in line with what he wants to do. We rarely ever disagreed in the studio. And I forgot to say this. So I wanted to work with a guy like Everlast because I was watching Beck.
Yep.
And this rock Rage Against the Machine and this rock rap thing and the Beasties was all around me, but it wasn't full blown yet. It wasn't Biscuit and Corn yet, right? That wasn't fully on yet. And
you did it in a way that wasn't corny. Most of that shit's corny.
I wanted to do something that had soul. And I literally, what no one knows is I had done a demo for, you know these guys, Roguish Armament.
Oh, they're chippy in them. Yeah, so
I did this demo.
Candy Hillchuck.
After I had made a couple of records and I wanted to make them my Beck. Right.
Oh,
and we had a record deal on the table for them, and Danny blew it. Danny,
the Hesher thing.
Yeah, it was before Hesher. Becoming Hesher. So I had figured out maybe a way to do rock rap, and I'd done a remix for like Chiba Mono and a couple other people. I had been playing in the space a little bit. I worked with Doggy Dog and tried to do some shit like that.
I remember that too.
So I went in. I kind of had a couple of experiments, right? Doggy Dog, Roguish Armament. I had a Beastie Boys remix, so I experimented a little bit how to do it. By the time I got to Everlast, I had figured it out. I had got my own style. And I can't say that I liked Beck's record a lot, and I liked the Dust Brothers.
Yeah.
And I always thought I could do that. I could do a better version, not better, a more soulful version of that.
More streets.
Right, because this is kitschy. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's like Beck with a bad attitude, right?
Yeah.
so we made the record. We went to L.A., me and John. I missed it so crazy. We shipped out 14 crates of records, all of our equipment, built a studio just like ours in his house.
That's crazy. We made the record.
That's
dope.
And before people recorded at home.
Yes, we did
the whole record in the house. The whole record.
I love your studio. West Beth was the best studio in the world to me. I love that. I love the whole feeling. I love the feeling that I had to go all the way to the west side and go down into this fucking basement. And I was like, the first time working, it's funny because Dante and I are boys. Like, Dante knows me from being on the street, being a fucking ass, being one of your young assholes.
When you moved to Connecticut, I remember you always talking about Dante in the office. You and I would talk about Dante,
Because when I worked with Dante, it didn't hit me as hard as right now. Think about it. Like, this guy's one of the best Grammy Award winning producer. He just knows, we know each other. He knows me as a crazy motherfucker in the club. Bill Spencer clubs are fighting all the time with his kids.
We're school kids, you know what I mean? We come from the same, you know, we come from
He was older generation than me, so he was looking at me like, oh, God.
I like how these guys. It's just crazy. I went to this party one time. This is so funny. It was Jessica's party, and I showed up, and the party was shut down. And I said, "What happened?" They said, "Yo, this kid. I think you know him, Ezak. He beat this dude up the stairs. He beat him up the stairs." I said, "Yo, that's fucking crazy." Yeah. In his voice, it reminded me a lot of you when you were younger. And I was like, yeah, that's my little man. And they were like, yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, that's great, man.
I was about to. John, he was like, yeah, that makes sense. He's like, I said, what happened? He said, yo, and they started beating dudes up. We didn't really want to get involved.
we would go to clubs, and all it was just funny seeing like people from Japan, mommy and all of them. They're like, "What are you doing in this club?" I'll be like, "Yo, I'll shut the club down right now." they think that yo, we're from Queens and Brooklyn. We go to Manhattan to chill. And right. You know, like first it started Sunday matinees, then there'd be clubs like Bill Spector's club. And poor Bill Spector. Had to deal with
Bill Spector, so before you guys were ruining his clubs, I was ruining his club. I would go to Bill Spector's house, and one of my friends, I mean, his party, one of my boys would stab someone or you know, some of them get beat up. Like it was always my friend, and I was always the one blamed because I was the only one anyone really knew.
I got a story for Dante. Eves, rest in peace, your boy Eves. I remember one time, I forgot where we were, but it was a party, and I remember Dante, Eves outside, and all of a sudden, they get into a beat, but Eves right next to me, and I see Dante, and I go, yo, I'm a Puerto Rican Mike and all these niggas, and we're all fucked up, and all of a sudden, it was a fight between the black, or Nels, who's at Nels, between blacks and Dominicans. And we were like, who's fighting who? We're like, oh shit. It was so crazy, and we were standing next to each other, like, yeah, these motherfuckers, and Puerto Rican Mike was so fucked up on coke, he's grinding his teeth. I'm like, yo, I said, get back in the fucking car. You're embarrassing me. Get in the car. He's like, I'm sorry. I can't stop it.
Yeah, we used to go to like Cheetah's, and you motherfuckers were always in Cheetah. And you were the only other people. It was me and Eves and like 11 criminal dudes. And you and your boys was the only people not black in the whole party. And we were all in one area. And I remember one night a crazy fight broke out, and we were watching and laughing. Like, you were like, yo, shit is crazy.
I love hearing stories like that. Hey, Dante, so I know we've kept you for a while.
I'm just watching basketball. I'm good.
One more quick story, though. I do want to ask you before we let you go is, I mean, one of the biggest records and artists you worked with was Santana, right?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, just the experience and what you did with those records and shit.
I mean, yeah, I worked with them three times. The first time is the most important probably. And I was hot with the Everlast record.
Yeah.
And a dude named Pete Gambarg. Now he's a president of A&R at Atlantic Records. He called me up and he said, do you guys have any songs for Santana? We're going to make a record. And he, you know, we all like the Everlast record. I bullshit him. I said, yeah, we got a song. I got a song for you. Yeah, no worries. And Everlast was coming to New York to shoot, I think, Good Morning America. I knew he was coming to town. And I hit him and I was like, yo, I got the hit up from this dude at Arista about Santana.
That's crazy. And
he was like, you got any songs? He's like, yeah, actually, I just wrote this song. It's like the first thing I wrote since I had the heart attack. And I was like, yo, it's crazy. So let's find some time when you come to New York. So we came to New York and I was thinking, let me find something that feels Latin drum wise. And I had an old song that had like a Latin kind of drum beat to it. It had like bongos in it. It was in a casual song. And I was like, that's the drums. And I chopped the drums up and Everlast came in and he played the song. I said, yo, I got these drums. What do you think? And I played them for him. He's like, yeah, this shit's just knocking. He had the song, and then we figured out the bridge. We did the fake Timberland part in the bridge.
I know what you're talking about. The reverse thing, like Trump.
Exactly. Like, it goes like, you know, hyperkinetic, double times. And then we recorded in one day, and I mixed it like that day. I think it was like a rough mix. And I sent it to the dude, and he was like, yo, we really like this. You know, we'll get back to you. And they called me like a week later. We're like, yo, we want you to do this. And I was like, okay, how do we, you know, what's up? And they're like, we'll fly you to the Bay Area. We'll get you guys all up there.
That's crazy.
We went up there and literally within the span of 10 days to 2 weeks from getting the phone call to giving them the demo, I was in Fantasy Studios in San Francisco recording the shit. And what's crazy is, so in that part of the country, like Bay Area, Oakland, I spent a lot of time because I work with Souls of Mischief. And my dad lived in San Francisco. So it's my second home. So when I was there, like, I remember Tajay and I'm from Souls of Mischief came and brought me weed at the studio. And like, I was like, it was like full circle and we nailed it. You know, we did the song and we did it quick. And We mixed it quick, and Bong was got put on the album. I remember I had never gotten paid that much for a song before in my life.
Crazy.
They asked me how much I wanted. I told them, and they were like, oh, no worries. And I was like, I should ask for twice as much. What am I stupid?
Crazy shit, man. That's some crazy. But you're like your stuff, Dante, your production as as a person. Dante's not a musician, not in the band. Nope. You know what I mean? But his production, his ear is so fucking great, man. And I'm just saying, like, you're like, he killed us a production tip.
Like, I sit there, like, I can't really play anything. I know melody a little bit. Yeah. I know how to play melodies a little, but I'm no musician.
Yeah, I have a good ear. That's what it is. You have a great ear, you know?
Good taste.
So good taste.
It's
Wait, I got a story right now. Okay. Dante, smile.
Smile.
Listen, but this stuff. I remember one time, I'll tell a story. We were at Two Hips Funeral. Listen, God rest him, Two Hips rest in peace. But, and Boston Mike was bugging, and you were sitting down next to me. But I remember Dante's story. MQ comes walking in outside, and you just turn around, and you look at his shoes. You're like, holy shit, this nigga's shoes are tied so tight, he's a criminal. You're like, this nigga is crazy. How crazy MQ? I was like, yeah, that nigga's crazy, bro. Yo, the old stories, he's like, that's MQ? That nigga's crazy.
So MQ is a phantom. Like, MQ, like, saying someone's just next to me, it's MQ. I'm like, the fuck?
Yeah. Crazy, yo. That's fucking great. So, yo, Dante, before we let you go, let everybody know, what are you into these days, man? Because you're working at a cool, you got some cool shit going on. So tell me where you're at.
I manage my man Marlon Kraft. He's on RCA, and I'm writing a lot. I sold a TV show, and I'm writing another one. You know, I'm just doing a lot of writing. I got a book coming out. I'm still involved in music, but I'm really focused on trying to write right now. And that's sick. So far, so good. And you know, I'm always very lucky when it comes to reinventing myself and doing something else.
Yeah.
And I think, like, right now where music is, I'm not that inspired by music right now, you know? So I'm trying to do some other creative stuff. And the main focus right now is writing.
Well, especially, I mean, with somebody like, you know, again, somebody who looks up to people like you. I mean, when you've accomplished so much in music, what else can you really do other than go try to, like, move on to and climb another mountain, right? You don't want to go redo this, especially in this day and age where records aren't sold the same ways. You're not going to be able to like have those milestones. I mean, me and Danny talk about this all the time, because I miss those days, dude. I miss the days of being able to ship, you know.
I mean, I left my job like a year ago, and the last hit records I signed were Made in Tokyo, Uber Everywhere, and Water by Ugly God. I'm just going to say this. I'm never going to listen to those records.
Right.
Right. So calculated bets, but
yeah.
And no knock on those guys. I signed a little dick on Macklemore too.
I was talking about also that Brand New Heavies, nigga.
I mean, I didn't sign a Brand New Heavies.
No, but I know that you on the Everlast record, that her voice.
She's one of the best.
When I met her with you, and I was like, holy shit, bro.
Yeah, I did a whole record with her. She's crazy. And Dia Davenport, she can sing her ass off. She's great. Yeah. You know, I also worked with Anthony Hamilton. I worked with Macy Gray.
Yeah.
You know, I had records on 8 Mile. Like, I worked with a lot of those guys.
I remember that, too. I remember that.
But if I could have worked with the Kendrick Lamars of today, I would, you know, if that fell in my lap, or J. Cole, I'd probably be inspired. But we look at rap, right? And, like, 80-plus percent of it is over here. And then you got, like, Anderson .Paak and Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole and a few things over here. But what I love about rap music is not the dominant factor in rap music anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love Kid Cudi, but he's in the minority of what I deal with him. I love Run the Jewels, but I do work with Kim Marlon Kraft, and I urge you to go listen to him. He's a fantastic rapper. He's amazing.
Oh, for real? He's rap?
Awesome. We will overlay it over. We'll plug him here as you watch it. So, yo, Dante, I just want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. This is a really fun conversation, especially hearing your journey.
Jay was really happy. He's really a big fan. So I'm
man, it was cool just to hear all the stories, man. Again, like I was saying to E, I feel like I could interview you for probably all fucking goddamn day here. So, but I won't keep everybody. But
you know what's crazy that I didn't say in the middle of me making all those records, I was also going crazy writing graffiti everywhere. Like, I was doing mad pieces.
No, that's how I tell how we met.
Oh yeah, you know, I think the whole thing. I don't even know that we even got to that.
his man Alex, he was mad at me because of some girl. We had a mutual.
He's a girl.
Deep sky.
I looked at him for 1 second, and he was like, "Fuck you, guy." I was with my man. I was like, "Oh, it's about to happen. You ready?" He was like. Ezek interjected himself and he said, No, I know him. It's good. I know who you are. You're friends with Blood Clot. It's all good. I was, thank you. And I was like, oh, this guy's a gentleman. I didn't know he was a savage. I soon found out, but we were always cool after that.
Always cool after that.
Yeah, I was already good friends with Bill and I was friends with the man Hips already. And yes. I knew Toby already.
Yes.
But I was always cool with Hips and the man Yaz.
Recipes. Oh man,
Dante, how can our listeners you on social media? Is there a way for
Dante Ross on Instagram, Dante Ross on Twitter? You know, get at me. I'm always online talking shit about sports a lot and politics. I'm heavy on the fuck Trump online, and I'm always making fun of basketball and whatever's out there. I'm very sarcastic online, so come check me out. And also, I put a lot of records online because I collect 45s. I put them up.
Oh, sick. Okay, awesome, man. Well, yo, Dante, thank you so much for joining us tonight on the episode. I also want to just thank all of our listeners who have been signing up for the YouTube, the email list, all that shit. Thanks again, Dante. It was great having you on. I think Danny's on, but maybe he's frozen, but he will say goodbye to you later. Dante, thank you so much. Guys, that's a wrap. Corona Chronicles, Diablo's End, episode 10. Stay tuned. Thank you.
The world is mine. 4-5, baby. Yeah. Rap the trapping. Sipping Fino. Diablo's magic. Knuckle dragging. Pants be sagging. Slaughtered like goats. Last man standing. Diablo on Mars. Devil.
Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.